factory floor. The workers talk of solidarity and refuse to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, they're chill.
This is the Quality News Network. At the White House today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with President Bush. The president pledged to help bolster the security situation in Baghdad by sending in more U.S. troops. Tomorrow, al-Maliki will address Congress. Some lawmakers opposed to the Iraqi leader's condemnation of Israel's attacks in Lebanon have threatened to boycott his speech. In the West Bank, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice spoke with reporters after her meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Prior to that meeting, she was in Jerusalem for talks with the Israeli prime minister. Her peace plan would reportedly include an international force of up to 10,000 Turkish and Egyptian troops in southern Lebanon once a ceasefire is reached. There would also be an additional group of up to 30,000 forces to assist the Lebanese government. Israel has opened up a humanitarian corridor for the safe transport of food and supplies to Lebanon. In Riyadh, the Saudi king pledged $1.5 billion to help Lebanon. Along the Israeli-Lebanon border, the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas is in its 14th day. Four loud blasts were reported in Beirut as Israeli warplanes hit southern Lebanon, killing six people, while troops sealed off a Hezbollah stronghold. Hezbollah rockets struck northern Israel. One girl was killed. So far, more than 390 people have been killed in Lebanon. An estimated 600,000 have been forced to leave their homes. In Israel, 40 civilians and soldiers have died. In Malaysia, China and South Korea are still trying to convince North Korea to join Friday's meeting about its nuclear program. Talks that include South Korea, the U.S., China, Japan, and Russia are scheduled for Friday. In Washington, Senator Arlen Specter, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is preparing to sue President Bush in federal court on behalf of Congress. At issue, the constitutionality of so-called signing statements in which the president has attached conditions to legislation. Also on Capitol Hill, the House today passed a bill that would create a national database on the internet of sex offenders. The legislation now goes to President Bush. In Washington, Democrats are criticizing a Senate bill that would punish anyone who helps underage girls cross state lines to get abortions. And in California, the heat wave continues with triple-digit temperatures expected to go on for the next few days. There have been 34 possible heat-related deaths. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A private research group reports that American consumer confidence showed a modest rise in July. This optimism comes despite higher gas prices. In June, sales of existing homes dropped 1.3%, according to the National Association of Realtors. It's the eighth time that sales have declined over the past 10 months. AT&T says its second quarter profits surged 81% thanks to the merger between the former AT&T and SBC Communications. McDonald's reports its second quarter profit grew nearly 60%, partly due to growth in the European market. Honda Motor Company plans to sell small jets, according to the Wall Street Journal. UPS reports that higher fuel costs will hurt its second quarter profit. The world's largest shipping carrier also says health care and pension costs are to blame. BP reports its second quarter profit was $7.27 billion. The New York Times calculates that equals more than $55,000 a minute. And the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission says he plans to push for more oversight of the largely unregulated hedge fund industry. This comes after an increase in fraud that is hurting ordinary investors. Light sweet crude settled at $73.70 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 53 points. The NASDAQ is up 12 points. The S&P 500 is up 8. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes after the hour, wonderful 2 hours put forth by our brother in arms. Well, not arms. Well, our brother in some other digits or something. Bruce Birch. Great show, Brother Bruce. Great show. And a wonderful, it's great to have Guy James back, too. We missed him during the downtime for the equipment repair, and I know you did as well. Just glad to, yeah. Monday, I had a blast last night. I don't know about you, but I certainly did. Heard from a couple of new friends over the course of the day. It's always, you know, it's exciting to me when we make that connection and we talk to me and that mouse in my pocket. You know, I'm the Queen of England. No, it's exciting for me when I get to make new friends with this program. And I want to make sure that you know that there is an opportunity for you to make a new friend that's coming to the network very soon. A week from today. See what happens to me? A week from today, Tuesday, August the 1st, we will be bringing a new program to the, it's not technically the airwaves, is it? It's sometimes I feel like Mr. Kimball from Green Acres. Well, the name's Kimball, Hank Kimball. No, that'd make me Hank Kimball Kimball. No, at any rate, a week from today, starting at noon Eastern, which would be, of course, 9 a.m. on the West Coast, something like 2 a.m. In Asia or the Pacific Rim. But at noon Eastern, I hope you will all be here to join us as we welcome our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien to the Head On Radio Network family. You're going to get so much out of this program. Dr. Bill is completely different from anybody else that is on this network, and I would submit to you, different from anybody else that's doing this out there from any perspective. 2 hours, noon to two, starting this Tuesday, the Dr. Bill O'Brien program. Call in, say hello, let him know that you're there, let him know that you're glad he's coming back. In particular, I can well imagine that folks who know Dr. Bill from the bad old days of terrestrial radio in Beckley will be especially thrilled to have him. I mean, there are even right-wingers that love Dr. Bill. What does that tell you? And everybody on our side loves him. I can't express to you how exciting this is to me, because there's Dr. Bill has a talent for reaching out, and for building bridges and crossing gaps. And we've got a lot of that yet to do because, well, you know, I mentioned last night that there was a public hearing regarding the latest coal silo down at Marsh Fork Elementary School, with which we remain, and by we, I mean Agnes, me, the family, not you know, me and Her Highness or anything, with which we remain very much concerned. So I went out and I picked up the local Beckley Fish newspaper.
Play nice.
That's right. And I read the article. Looks like there was a lot of strength and a lot of solidarity in the hearing yesterday. And the hearing was a question. You know, why is there even a hearing being held? The question is, should Massey Energy be allowed? And look at, you know, just because you're not in the Coal River Valley doesn't mean something like this can't happen to you. It's a coal silo down in Sundial. Somewhere else, it's a chemical plant. You know, isn't it interesting? They don't build the big pollution generating monstrosities next to mansions. Do you ever notice that? You ever wonder why? No, you don't have to wonder why, because you're smart, you're liberal, you're conservative, and you've already got it figured out. That's what makes... Well, move along, Bob.
I thought it was only the hippies that cared about that.
So, anyway, I read the article about the hearing in regard to the coal silo. Well, you know, we need to put a little more poison next to them children. So, I'm Don Blankenstein, and I ain't got but about a couple of $100 million, and I don't know, I could go broke any day. Now, it's going to take a whole lot of money to buy off an entire election and make sure that I get my way and get to run roughshod over the entire state of West Virginia. You understand that, don't you? That's why I gotta have another coal silo down there next to that school. Make me some more money. Put some more itsy bitsy teensy weensy little less than 10 micron particles of coal into those little children's lungs so it'll settle in the bottom of them and make breathing real fun in about 20, 30 years or so. But of course, there's an aspect to opening the paper that for me, and it's any paper, frankly, especially any paper with a regional flavor. I love the letters to the editor because every now and then you open the letters to the editor section and it's one of those where the bats just come flying out, just, you know, like the beginning of Scooby-Doo. And I got one today. This is a Shirley Crawford from Gent, and I'm going to share some of this with you because you need to understand 60, 70, you know, Bush's approval ratings are at... Well, let's see. More people approve of gay marriage than approve of George Bush. More people approve of pulling out of Iraq than approve of George Bush. More people approve of stem cell research than approve of George Bush. I mean, the list is almost endless. But just because, don't be fooled, because the hardcore cancerous little tumor knot of Bush-loving freaks is still out there, and that's this. This is a letter to the editor from Shirley Crawford of Ghent, West Virginia. That's Ghent. To ignore the facts does not change the facts. In any struggle, it is of this magnitude essential to know what you are fighting for and what you are fighting against. Atta girl, Shirley. Are you not sympathetic toward the weak and oppressed who cannot help themselves yet? Should not their days of sorrow end? Should they all perish at the hands of the terrorists, even the women and little children? Well, we'll work with you here, Shirley. Keep going. Terrorists don't care how progressive or how peace-loving we are. They want us dead. And you think Bush and Cheney are your worst enemies? I believe there is still a distinct possibility there are weapons buried in the grounds of Iraq. They had three airplanes buried in the sands there that were found by our boys. Do you know how large a hole would have to be to bury an airplane? Bring our boys home? Our boys don't want to come home yet. They went to Iraq to do a job. They are not quite finished. True, they captured Saddam, but there are still terrorists left to search out. Some have a score to settle with them. They have lost a buddy and or family members. They want sweet revenge. Can you blame them? Come on, Americans. What part don't you understand? They don't want to bring the terrorists back home with them to blow up our country and people to bloody smithereens. What about our soldiers who have already lost their lives for what they believed in? Freedom. Have they all died to no avail? The United States, England, and now Bumbia and others. No, really, Bumbia. B-U-M-B-I-A, Bumbia. If the terrorists manage to get their hands on a nuke, chemical agents, or even some anthrax, you will wish to God they had hunted them down while they had a chance. They might not get another chance. What part don't you understand, America? All that death and destruction could be happening over here. How many more of our boys must die before we stop blaming Bush? What is your worst nightmare? No arsenal or no weapon of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of our free men and women. We need our country back. We need God back in our country. If we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. Answers, please. Humor me. Shirley Crawford, Gent, West Virginia. You think I'm making this up, don't you? Register-herald.com. Read it for yourself. I read it word for word, including the United States, England, and now Bumbia.
You know, I never leave. Now I know why.
Bumbia? This is, please understand, this is that last little dirt ignorant knot of people that are still out there defending George Bush. This is all that's left. I mean, this is like, you ever see those pictures of Hitler going to shaking the hands of the 12-year-olds? Oh, you are doing a wonderful job defending the fatherland. Well, maybe two of you can hold up the Panzerfaust. Yes, I know you're little. This is, you know, this is what's left to defend George Bush. It's heartening. It's kind of pathetic. But it is also a warning. Because the ignorant, when they are cornered, are at their most dangerous. Our boys don't want to come home yet. They went to Iraq to do a job. They are not quite finished. Some have a score to settle with them. They have lost a buddy and or family members. I read this to you because I got a news story in the little happy stack today. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Yep, sure enough. In the little happy stack, headline, soldiers plan to argue rape tied to distress. Attorneys for Army soldiers accused of raping an Iraqi teenager and killing her and her family in March are planning to argue that the men were under extreme emotional distress because of the horrors of their combat assignment and will probably challenge the alleged confession some of the soldiers gave to investigators in Iraq. Some have a score to settle with them. They have lost a buddy and or family members. They want sweet revenge. David Sheldon, a civil lawyer who is representing Specialist James P. Barker, said yesterday that B Company, 1st Battalion, 502nd Infantry Regiment, was devastated by numerous combat casualties and repeated violent attacks in and around Mumadia before and after a group of soldiers allegedly attacked the Iraqi family March 12th. Sheldon said the men were placed at a traffic checkpoint, quote, in one of the most stressful environments imaginable, unquote, and that commanders failed to recognize the damage that was being done to the soldiers. What about our soldiers who have already lost their lives for what they believed in? Freedom. Have they all died to no avail? The United States, England, and now Bumbia, and others. They don't want to bring the terrorists back home with them to blow up our country and people to bloody smithereens. Any questions? Let's take a break. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. The phone number is 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Like I said, you can check that out for yourself. That's a real, live, honest-to-God letter to the editor from Shirley Crawford of Gent, West Virginia. And now Bumbia? What about Bumbia? I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's talk on the street. Sounds so familiar. Great expectations. Everybody's watching you. People you meet, they all seem to know you. Even your old friends treat you like you're something new.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Woo!
For the Head On Radio Network, reporting live, I'm Bob Kincaid in Bumbia.
Jesus. Bumbia. Okay, let's be fair. Did she mean Mumbai?
Possibly. I don't know. What's Trinity Broadcast putting out?
Well, you know, the Trinity Broadcasting Network, there's all kinds of countries in it. They have a score to settle. So please understand, you know, we get a little ahead of ourselves from time to time, or at least I do, because I sort of live in a place where I, you know, if I hear a wingnut talker, if I happen to, you know, like lose the power in my clicker thumb and the TV stops on Fox, I'll sit there for a couple of, oh, you lying bastards, you know, that kind of thing. But I then think, well, you know, we've gotten over this. We know there were no weapons. I personally think they are digging holes to bury airplanes in Iraq. I mean, do you remember when Johnny Carson would do the thing where he would come on with, this is a opposing viewpoint, with the red and black checkered shirt or jacket or whatever, and the cap with the earmuff flaps down over his ears, and he'd stand there stock still, and he would talk like this. I read that letter, and that's the first place I went. That was the first thing that flashed in it. And this poor woman. You know that her little right-wing friends from her little right-wing cult church have called her up and said, Shirley, you nailed it, sister. You just told them, praise Jesus, you did. I saw that Fox News report about the airplanes buried in the sand, too. Well, that's a big old hole, isn't it, sister? So that's, you know, I mean, that's where you kind of are. And, of course, she's sitting around pining because Dear Leader is coming to West Virginia this week. Wednesday night. Now, he's not going to show up in public. No, please. He's not going to show up in public at all. He's attending a $4,200 a plate per couple dinner for Shelley Arch in a bad wig Moore. Shelley Moore, for those of you outside the state of West Virginia, is, for some reason, known but to Satan, West Virginia's 2nd District Congress critter. And she is the daughter of the single most dirty, filthy, rotten, evil, corrupt SOB to ever occupy the governor's mansion of this state, namely Arch Moore. And she looks like Arch in a bad wig. I'm not kidding. And so Bush is coming here. He's not going to stand up beside her in public or anything. This is, again, for that hardcore, cancerous, weird little knot of people that still support this freak. You know, the guy that chews with his mouth open, acts like, you know, swears like a drunken sailor and gropes German chancellors. That Bush. He will not be seen in public. The West Virginia will never know he was even here. Shelley is opposed by a fine fella, a classmate of mine from once upon a time, a gentleman by the name of Mike Callahan. And I think they've changed the website, but they've still got the domain name callahanforcongress.com, C-A-L-L-A-G-H-A-N. C-A-L-L-A-G-H-A-N, callahanforcongress.com. You need to go there, learn a little bit about Mike. He's a good fella. And his race, frankly, deserves to be nationalized. If getting rid of Tom DeLay was important enough to nationalize that race, then getting rid of Tom DeLay's best gal, because Shelley Moore is Tom DeLay's best gal, ought to be of national importance, too. And Mike is struggling to, I mean, you know, $4,200 a plate. She's going to have, oh, a couple or $3-4 million to spend on this election, you know, because there aren't any hungry people or people who need housing or anything like that in West Virginia. Shelley Moore just needs to get her feet, you know, get her, you know, front cloven hooves in the trough, too. But she was literally the second largest recipient of the filthy money that was doled out by Tom DeLay. She's got to go, and this is another one of those little situations where West Virginia deserves to be on the radar for the rest of the nation. We need to get rid of Shelley Moore, and we need your help. So go to Mike's website, and Callahan, like I said, it's got a G in it. Callaghan. It might be MikeWV.com by now, I'm not sure. But go have a look at Mike's campaign website. He could use your support, and he could use you talk. He could sure stand to have it talked up outside West Virginia and outside the 2nd West Virginia Congressional District. Okay, he would sincerely appreciate it. I don't live in the 2nd District. Let's go to the phones. David is with us, calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm all right. You said Bumbia, right?
Bumbia.
Isn't Kevin Federline the ambassador of Bumbia?
I think Kevin Federline is the either from or to. I'm not sure which.
I wanted to make something clear. If an apocalypse happens, people, and you see a red dawn outside and a red sky and demons come out falling from the sky, the only thing people are going to say is, where'd my MySpace go? That's the generation we live in now.
Yeah, interesting you would bring up MySpace, David, because have you seen the latest group to decide that MySpace was the place they wanted to be?
I am thinking of Murdoch.
No. Murdoch owns it. I mean, there's lots of liberals and progressives out there on MySpace that don't even realize that they're participating in the Fox Empire by going there. But the latest group to decide that they want to be MySpacers, the United States Marine Corps.
Hmm.
They have signed up, and it's a recruiting tactic. It's you know, recruiters. I mean, by definition, they're dirty and sleazy and filthy, and you know, they lie. But their latest trick is to try to con you into by getting your contact information. You know, sort of the same way a kiddie rapist cruises MySpace. They're getting kids to sign up as a Marine Corps fan club and give out all their personal information so that these recruiters can prey upon them. And they say that they've got tens of thousands already signed up.
That's pretty crazy.
I'd call it sick.
I wonder how many are actually going to show up.
I mean, they haven't signed up for the Corps. They've just signed up, you know, as, you know, friends of the Corps.
Right. Well, of course, you got to wonder how many are generated, because they have name generators now.
That's possible. I don't know.
I mean, that's the game, Bob. I mean, it's the game is to look like you have an alliance on your side. And I know they have generators out there where you can just create 100 or 200 or so names in a day or something, and you just leave a program, and it'll just go and it'll just go through a bunch of them. That's what a lot of spam bots do, anyway. Right now,
yeah,
they're getting more clever with it, and I don't know, but on the other side of things, with the voting, I was listening to John Elliott yesterday, so please forgive me that I wasn't listening head on. But I was listening to John Elliott because I wanted to hear what he said yesterday on Air America, and he did something that I think that I recommend, and I think it's high time that a lot of radio people do it, which is he was calling the San Diego voters the polling centers or the election commission, and he was basically trying to get information on why they kept the voting machines at home, and he would say, we're live on the radio, and he would talk to the secretary, And I was thinking, this is a great tactic, if you think about it, to get radio shows to do this. And I think it's something that I would pass on to you as a suggestion. And I just think it's a great idea, personally.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So that was one I think they got through at least to, like, the voicemail of the person. I don't know, Bob. It's just something to think about on that.
No, it is worth thinking about. Without doubt. Without doubt.
I think because of how everything has become so problematic with getting any sort of headway in this direction of just questions, basically what this guy was asking for San Diego, which was why did they take the voting machines home, which doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, why is it necessary?
And another thing that was interesting was some of these people didn't even have any training in San Diego. I was listening to this guy. I was like, that can't be right. But apparently some people didn't have like 2 or 3 hours of training when you're supposed to have like a total of something like 48 or at least 16 or something.
Well, I mean, it's part of the con. There's
right.
There's nothing secure. There's nothing safe. There's nothing right about these stupid black boxes machines. I mean, but there's nothing new in this, David. I mean, Greg Palast showed us as far back as Florida what was being done with the black box machines.
Right. I mean, I think the thing that I was mentioning was the approach, because I think when people are on the radio, if you get through to a commissioner or whoever, they're not going to hang up on you because they're live on the radio.
True.
And
I don't know. I've been hung up on.
Oh, have you?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah. Sooner or later, if you press the sore spots, they will. They'll run away.
Hmm. Well, in victorious news, Mike Stark actually got through to the Freedom Concert at Sean Hannity.
You mean the one with Hank Williams Jr.?
Yeah, and Sean Hannity before he went to the microphone, Mike said he heard him. He said, "Who let this guy in? He shouldn't be here." I mean, that's stupid. Now it gets better though. They let the guy in with the video camera, and then Sean Hannity goes to approach the crowd. And he gets on the microphone, he goes, "I just want to tell you people about a radical liberal. He's going to try to make you to say stupid things." And
beware, the liberal is amongst you.
Right, all the people are starting to boo him. But what's funny was, so they kick out Mike, and they think, okay, we did our job. We kicked him out. But you see, Mike is smarter than the average bear, like Yogi.
Yeah.
He brought a cameraman.
Hey, boo-boo.
So the cameraman was constantly, I mean, Bob, they got hours and hours of footage to show the world. I mean, this has to scare Hannity. They have so much. I mean, they didn't stop at anything.
No, but see, please understand something, David. This doesn't scare Hannity. Okay? Hannity understands the first rule of public relations. And the first law of public relations is there is no such thing as bad press. Okay? If you're mentioned poorly or if you're mentioned well, what matters is the fact that you are mentioned. And all, you know, so, you know, what Mike did was he's giving Sean Hannity free public publicity. And he's giving it to the one place that Sean Hannity can't get it, the left. So that means that maybe a few more lefties will crucify their own brain cells and tune into that monstrosity just kind of the way you slow down going by a traffic accident.
Hmm.
I admire what Mike is trying to do.
Yeah.
But he is doing for Hannity, not to him.
I agree with that somewhat, and then somewhat I don't agree with that, because I understand that on the phone, the screener, they really had it up to here with Mike. I mean, they don't see, the thing is, Bob, they don't appreciate the bad part of the publicity, because Mike's an anomaly. He's a 4-year Marine veteran, He has credibility that Hannity doesn't have. And if they try to go after Mike, they're gonna hit a roadblock, because all he's doing is he's just showing for what they really are.
Yeah, so they just let the cannon roll around on deck.
Right. So I think the thing was, they really did not want Mike to be there because they were going to get that footage. And I guess he got some. I guess he got some people saying some really stupid crap. So.
Well, I want to see it. I haven't had a chance yet.
I know. I don't want to see Hannity. I want to see what he got people to say on camera.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I want to see.
But then again, you know, there is no such thing as bad publicity is really a rule of thumb, especially in media.
Right.
If it embarrasses Hannity, maybe. I mean, if you've seen this, apparently Keith Olbermann is finally really beginning to get under the fingernails of Roger Ailes. You know, when he held up the O'Reilly mask and gave the Nuremberg salute.
Yeah, I see that.
Ailes, well, that's over the top.
I see even he got the Drudge to march in the direction of going after Olbermann again.
And see, Olbermann understands that when these swine attack him, it does him nothing but good. I mean, I know some of this by personal experience, because there's a freak on in the morning over in Beckley.
Right.
And during the couple of years that I was there, I made it a point never to talk about this goon, okay? And yet, by the time, my show would go off on one evening, the next morning his show would come on, and his little wingnut listeners would call, "Did you hear what Bob said last night, Steve?" And they would spend 3 hours talking about me, and by the time I come in the evening and I go on the air again, I'm going, well, I won another one.
Right.
Because as long as I'm not talking about them and they're talking about me, I'm winning.
Right. You know, but on the other side of those things, I think if we do have a Republican Congress and Senate, Air America's ratings are going to go through the roof.
Well, Air America's growing by leaps and bounds. You know, I mean, people like O'Reilly, they'll be out of business day after tomorrow. But they're not.
But then on the other side of the things, for the Head-On Radio Network, if it does happen, and we do go into those dark times, it will help your radio show too. So,
well, to a certain extent, yeah.
Right.
But we're trying to produce something here, David, that is different from, I guess you could call it commercial product.
Right.
We're not kidding when we say conversation radio. You know, we really do give out big, huge hunks of time for people to get said what they want said, and you can't. And I'm not criticizing anybody, but you simply cannot do that if you're not your own boss. You know, if I want to ditch a break, I ditch a break.
Right.
Or you know, if Agnes waves the iron skillet at me, I take the break. Because you know, some of this is about it's not just about me; it's about her. But this is free-form stuff. And bless their hearts, nobody doing commercial radio can do this, because when it comes time for the break, you know, there are everywhere you've got an affiliate, there's a computer system that's waiting to be fired, and if you don't hit that break, the computer automation system goes straight to hell in a hurry.
I agree with you, and I think people should realize something about always wanting to be on the news and wanting to get their message out on the evening news. I mean, that's great and all, but the reality is that base is shrinking. And the audience for the Internet is just growing by leaps and bounds, like you say it is. And people really need to understand that, yeah, you are getting the message out. It's just that it's cloaked and you can't really see the effect you're having yet.
Well, but, because among other things, Arbitron and Nielsen and those organizations are just now getting around to figuring out how they can rate what's going on the Internet. And it drives them crazy that they haven't been able to, because that's how they make their money. But the fact of the matter is, you can't sit there listening to a radio and type back talk back.
Like, for example, the YouTube thing,
yeah,
it is just phenomenal for gas on the right side of just putting up there and just putting that 30-second clip of Bush speaking to Blair or Bush to Merkel. I mean, that kind of,
you're paying
for that kind of publicity.
And it scares the life out of mainstream media, David. I had an article until I accidentally turned my own computer off the other night. I can't be trusted around buttons. But I had an article up from CNN talking about the phenomenon of the Merkel grope. And it said, you know, mainstream media has not necessarily, but, you know, on the Internet, this has been 5 seconds of absolute torment for blah, 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 blah. And then it referred to it referred to a blog post by some lefty commentator, maybe it was Coase or whatever, who said, you know, this just goes to prove, or no, I think the comment, David, was, somebody needs to tell George Bush that the G8 summit's not a Sigma Chi kegger. Okay, that's the comment.
Right.
And the author of this story on CNN, and, you know, you can see the little nose go up in the air, and, you know, they're holding their coffee cup, and they've got their little pinky out.
Right.
Because they typed because it wasn't writing. It was the whole Truman Capote thing. Yeah, this isn't writing. This is typing. the line after the thing, of course, George Bush was a member of Delta Kappa Epsilon, not Sigma Chi. Which goes to prove the first rule of the blogosphere. Blogs don't always tell the truth.
Right.
They're scared to death of the next wave of real journalism.
You know, you brought up Daily Coast, and that was interesting. I forgot about mentioning this another time that I was going to mention this, but I find it kind of weird or strange. Not so weird, but kind of... I don't know, that the fact that Daily Coast is already supporting against Cynthia McKinney. They're promoting Hank Johnson or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But on the other side of things, I'm wondering why Cynthia McKinney, I haven't heard a response why she wasn't in session for a lot of those bills, and I think that right there is losing respect.
Well, you know, even among the liberals, I mean, I've seen, and I pointed it out in that little essay that I posted, that the guys posted for me over at WD40.com
right.
today, there are cracks appearing, and I hate to even mention them because I don't want to give them any legs.
Right.
There are cracks appearing in the liberal movement, okay?
Right.
We have long been masters of the circular firing squad in the first place. But... you know, immigration showed us one because, you know, I lost listeners because I wouldn't say, you know, they all need to go back to Mexico where they's come from. I wasn't going to do that because they're my fellow human beings. I wouldn't do that. I lost some listeners over it. I don't give a damn. You know, you want to hear, you know, put them in a fence, you know, turn on Hannity. Okay. I've made people mad with my stance on Israel and Lebanon because I think, you know, I don't agree with blowing up little Lebanese babies for the hell of it.
Right.
And that's pissing people off. And frankly, I think some of that can be ascribed as well to Cynthia McKinney, because Cynthia McKinney, in the place where I grew up in the Deep South, she would have been referred to, David, as uppity. She is uppity. Because she is not going to take any crap from anybody. White, black, red, green, blue, purple, or polka-dotted, she's not going to take any crap, and she's going to tell you what she thinks.
Or Bob should be referred to as the N-word also.
Well, that one too. But, you know, in polite society, in the basement of the Baptist church, we didn't use the N-word.
Society,
we used uppity.
Yes. In the polite society, she would be referred to as the V-word.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think what's going to happen next is we're witnessing the birth of the neoliberal. And those liberals are going to be almost... sort of like the opposite parallel of what the neoconservatives are, real aggressive in their movement, and dangerous. Everything that the right was threatened by that didn't exist, guess what, Bob? Here it comes.
Yeah, well, no, see, I got a little bit of that in me, David. I want to be the worst nightmare of the right wing.
Right.
You know, I advocate that people, you know, when they hear him say, yeah, well, you know, this moron woman in the newspaper today. No, she's, okay, ignorant. No, ignorance can be cured. This woman is stupid. I'm sorry, I'm having an argument with Agnes here at the same time, David.
Oh, okay.
No, she's stupid. She can't be cured. And the fact of the matter is, you know, she might be a lovely human being, but would you turn your back on somebody that thinks that Americans are in Iraq to settle a score? Holy cow. And I believe, to a certain extent, we've got to get in their faces. I hope somebody will write in... And, you know, just, dear editor, what color is the sky on Ms. Crawford's planet?
Well, you know, I heard a great term of, instead of neocons or cons, this guy came up with this term, he calls them pseudocons.
Well, yeah, and I'm reading John Dean's book right now,
right.
Conservatives Without Conscience.
And
he says that there's nothing conservative about these people. He calls them. He says that they are authoritarians, plain and simple. And I think that fits them much better. Because Barry Goldwater wouldn't be allowed into their little into their little clavern. And Barry Goldwater was the father of modern conservatism as far as mainline political circumstances go.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. I think that definitely needs to be some tweaking and tinkering on the framing of words and.
Well, yeah, I mean because it was Buckley was on the Sunday talk shows, David. William F. Buckley.
Yeah.
I forget which one. Was it Russert he was on with? I can't remember. They all sort of blur for me. But you know, Buckley was out there talking about and he dropped a dime on George Bush. But I'm very cynical about that because I'm hearing that more and more and more. You know, people wanting to get away from George, and what you always hear from the real hardcores, David, is, well, you know, he's not really a conservative. We didn't know that he wasn't a conservative. We thought he was. He said he was a conservative. He said he was a compassionate conservative. But he's not.
You know,
because, you see, if this is the important point, David.
Yeah.
If we let them get away with saying that, you know, he's not really a conservative, because what they're trying to do, they got the House. They got the Senate. They got the Supreme Court. They got the executive branch. They got most of the governors in the United States, most of the state houses, and they are and they're in the toilet. Everything they have touched has gone to caca. So now they have to back away and say, well, it's not a failure of our philosophy. It's a failure in execution by the person. But, you know, we can get it right next time. Please let us keep our feet in the trough.
You know, I would tend to think that they're chaotic, nihilistic liberals. That's what I would think, that this new conservative movement that's hiding under it. Because they really are liberal to liberal in a sense, because they believe that, I mean, liberal... They're the dark side of being of what liberal can be.
That argument has been made, and it's been made fairly cogently. Janice Rogers Brown is a classic case in point. Janice Rogers Brown, when she was at the University of California, Berkeley, or whatever, was a Maoist. You remember who Janice Rogers Brown was, right? Is.
Right.
You know, we might as well have lost the filibuster in the Senate over Janice Rogers Brown. This woman has no business being judge of a traffic court, let alone the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. But she was ramrodded on there because a bunch of lily-livered Democrats, oh, they're going to take away our filibuster. By God, go down shooting. But Janice Rogers Brown was a... And I'm not kidding. This is not exaggeration. This is not hyperbole, David. Janice Rogers Brown was a... Maoist in college. Ultra,
what?
A Maoist. You know,
oh.
Little red book, funny little hat, ugly clothing. Maoist.
What happened? More money to be made, I guess, on the conservative
side. Well, that's the point, though. She's still a Maoist. Back then, though, you said, oh, wow, you know, they're commies. They're to the left. Mao was never a communist. Mao was no more of a communist than Stalin was. Authoritarian fascists.
You know, the best criticism, this is going to surprise you, but the best criticism I've read on the administration isn't from any people that we would associate with being an intelligent critic. But I have to tell you, I have to send it to you. It's a letter. I don't know if you've seen it yet. It's a letter by Saddam Hussein. And he breaks down what his problem with about the United States.
Is this the one that was published in the Asia Times?
I think so.
They're coming after you, David. I heard that.
Yeah, I know. It's like 5 pages or something.
I scanned it. I didn't read the whole thing. If you can still find it, shoot it to me. I'd like to reread it.
Yeah, it's really interesting what he says in his beliefs about what the U.S. administration is about and what he hopes for change. And I mean, to listen to Saddam, it sounds like he's like William Buckley a mad William Buckley, but I guess they're both one and the same. But
well, you know, what do you want from a dictator who spent a lot of his time, for God's sakes, writing romance novels? He did. He really did.
Oh yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah. But you know, well, he's got a hose going through his nose and down into his belly right now, you know, because he accepted the feeding tube Saddam does. And, you know, it gets weirder and weirder and stranger by the day. I mean, his criticisms are offered from the inside of the belly of the beast. And the thing is, there's a lesson out there, and people keep not learning it. Every time you get near the Bush family, crap will happen to you, okay?
Right.
Manuel Noriega was, you know, I mean, it's like the old Groucho Marx line where the woman says, closer, closer, and he says, if I get any closer, I'll be in back of you. You know, he couldn't have been any closer to the Bush family, Manuel Noriega.
Right.
And when his usefulness was ended, well, we made war on Panama. We blew up little poor Panamanian people to get at this guy with the bad skin condition on his face.
Right.
And we had a big show trial in Miami, and he's off somewhere in a federal prison cell. The same thing happened to Saddam. You know, just absolute buddies with the Bush family. His usefulness ended, and now he's got a hose down his nose feeding him, for all I know, pork barbecue the way those monsters are.
Well, it makes you wonder if that's because he put out that letter.
Well, that could be, or it could be because look, it does not take a rocket scientist, and God knows the Bush administration doesn't have any of them, to figure out that you're in a no-win situation with Saddam Hussein. You needed him dead or gone or actively fighting you or something, but, you know, they're on the, you know, it's like the whole thing about, you know, when you go to ride the tiger, you got the ears and you got the tail, and all you can do is hang on till he wears out. That's where they are with Saddam. The trial was a failure.
You know,
it's still a failure.
I keep wondering about people in the administration, how many people are sitting around like, should I be here? Is it for me time for me to go now? These people.
Do I need
crazy.
To spend more time with my family?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that, I hope that that's a perception of a lot of them. I mean, I would be generally scared if all of them were like, if most of the people in the administration, including the security detail and everybody, was really, really on the side of believing in everything that this administration says. Would scare me.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you want to add to the list? You know, there's Manuel Noriega, there's Saddam Hussein. You know who the latest addition to that list is?
Who?
Catherine Harris.
Who?
Catherine Harris.
Catherine Harris.
Running for Senate in Florida, and Jeb Bush is out there doing everything he can do to torpedo her campaign. I mean, she's helping. You know, she's crazier than a sprayed roach to start with. But, yeah, the Bush family is saying, you know, we don't want nothing to do with Catherine Harris. She did her bit in 2000. She was a good soldier, and she wouldn't go away, and now we got to get rid of her. You know, I mean, you know, it's the whole thing in The Godfather with a guy on, what's with the fish in the news? That means Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. You know, she's going to wake up with a horse's head in her bed. It's what happens when you hang out with the Bush family.
She'd probably like that.
Did I just channel Randy Rhoads?
You might have.
Oh, God,
you might have. It did sound kind of familiar.
Yeah. David, thanks so much. We got to stop for the news.
All right, Bob. Later.
Bye now. No, I heard a little bit of that accent coming out.
Yeah, I wasn't for that.
Yeah, I had my psyche taken over. It's a little bit scary. Listen, let's take a break for the news. Your phone calls, yeah, jump right in. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio.
This is the Quality News Network. At the White House today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with President Bush. The president pledged to help bolster the security situation in Baghdad by sending in more U.S. troops. Tomorrow, al-Maliki will address Congress. Some lawmakers opposed to the Iraqi leader's condemnation of Israel's attacks in Lebanon have threatened to boycott his speech. In the West Bank, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice spoke with reporters after her meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Prior to that meeting, she was in Jerusalem for talks with the Israeli prime minister. Her peace plan would reportedly include an international force of up to 10,000 Turkish and Egyptian troops in southern Lebanon once a ceasefire is reached. There would also be an additional group of up to 30,000 forces to assist the Lebanese government. Israel has opened up a humanitarian corridor for the safe transport of food and supplies to Lebanon. In Riyadh, the Saudi king pledged $1.5 billion to help Lebanon. Along the Israeli-Lebanon border, the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas is in its 14th day. Four loud blasts were reported in Beirut as Israeli warplanes hit southern Lebanon, killing six people, while troops sealed off a Hezbollah stronghold. Hezbollah rockets struck northern Israel. One girl was killed. So far, more than 390 people have been killed in Lebanon. An estimated 600,000 have been forced to leave their homes. In Israel, 40 civilians and soldiers have died. In Malaysia, China and South Korea are still trying to convince North Korea to join Friday's meeting about its nuclear program. Talks that include South Korea, the U.S., China, Japan, and Russia are scheduled for Friday. In Washington, Senator Arlen Specter, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is preparing to sue President Bush in federal court on behalf of Congress. At issue, the constitutionality of so-called signing statements in which the president has attached conditions to legislation. Also on Capitol Hill, the House today passed a bill that would create a national database on the Internet of sex offenders. The legislation now goes to President Bush. In Washington, Democrats are criticizing a Senate bill that would punish anyone who helps underage girls cross state lines to get abortions. And in California, the heat wave continues with triple-digit temperatures expected to go on for the next few days. There have been 34 possible heat-related deaths. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A private research group reports that American consumer confidence showed a modest rise in July. This optimism comes despite higher gas prices. In June, sales of existing homes dropped 1.3%, according to the National Association of Realtors. It's the eighth time that sales have declined over the past 10 months. AT&T says its second quarter profits surged 81% thanks to the merger between the former AT&T and SBC Communications. McDonald's reports its second quarter profit grew nearly 60%, partly due to growth in the European market. Honda Motor Company plans to sell small jets, according to the Wall Street Journal. UPS reports that higher fuel costs will hurt its second quarter profit. The world's largest shipping carrier also says health care and pension costs are to blame. BP reports its second quarter profit was $7.27 billion. The New York Times calculates that equals more than $55,000 a minute. And the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission says he plans to push for more oversight of the largely unregulated hedge fund industry. This comes after an increase in fraud that is hurting ordinary investors. Light sweet crude settled at $73.70 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 53 points. The Nasdaq is up 12 points. The S&P 500 is up 8. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You know, sometimes it's not worth it trying to reach out. In this slaughter that's going on in the Levant, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I do off air to try to make the on air stuff good. For instance, we've got an upcoming conversation with an honest to God psychologist, and we're going to talk about what the hell is wrong with George W. Bush, because something obviously, very seriously, is. So I go out there and I try to bring people on the program that will illuminate various and sundry issues. And sometimes it all goes horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. In particular, I shot out a couple of invitations to people who had the street cred to talk about Lebanon and the Lebanese and what's being done to them. Very gently. I mean, if you've had an email from me, you know that I write well. You know that I write cogently. And you know that I am above all polite. The story that comes to mind was my attempt to have a discussion with Larry over at bootmirtha.com. You know, I just wrote him and invited, said, you know, I'd like to discuss this with you on the program. And he writes back, I see no point in arguing with you. Jesus. Well, it's happened again. I wrote to a couple of people, bloggers in the Lebanese community. And if you've listened to this program, you know, well, anyway. So, I get this response on the blog. Saying, please see the following. It speaks for itself, and it's more pictures of the horrors in Lebanon. It's not like I haven't seen them before. But then I get, but let me ask you a question. How would you like it if I attacked your house, killed half your family, made the other half flee to the desert to a neighboring country, took your house from you and your family, and settled your house with immigrants who had never lived in your country? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. How would you feel about that? Actually, how would feel about that? Bumbia? Is that okay with you? Would you think this action was humane, civilized, and just? I would be happy to discuss this subject of stealing houses and lands and countries with you at any time you wish. You have my email. No, I don't. Dumbass didn't email back.
Not a dumbass, just a very upset person that evidently...
Regards. This is how the email ends. Regards, gentle person. Really? This guy's done everything but call me a Zionist stooge. Yeah, right, you know, kumbaya, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya, that, daisies, you know.
But Agnes isn't.
There are some people to whom one may not reach out. Dear God, now I'm channeling Captain Kirk. We come in peace. We, see, no. What is it with people? I mean... There's a very good reason for being very upset about what is going on in Lebanon and Israel. And there's a very good reason for being very upset about what is going on in Washington, D.C. Because what is going on in Washington, D.C. is empowering what's going on over there. And you try to reach out, and you're gentle and kind and decent. And you get... Would you think this action was humane, civilized, and just?
Well, you know, evidently this person hasn't listened to the show very much.
Oh, I don't think this person's listened to the show at all.
Because we live in Massey country, and of course, Massey would like to buy up West Virginia and get rid of that.
Buy it, steal it.
But that's another show. But Bob is very peaceful.
Yeah, she's the mean one.
I'm the mean one. And, you know, it's just very offensive when someone talks about killing my family. It wouldn't be okay.
They're not talking about killing your family, Agnes.
No, I'm not
saying. See, she reads something like this, and then it goes, and we go straight to DEFCON.
No, I don't take it as a threat. But what I'm saying is, no, that wouldn't be okay with me. I don't think that anyone's family should be killed or displaced or raped or murdered or burned at the stake or anything like that. But you are more than welcome to call in, and the number's there.
And we're sweet and nice and gentle, and Agnes won't even scream at you the first couple of times you call.
I don't scream at anyone.
I'm kidding, dear. Stand down from sweat condition alpha, Agnes. Let's go to the phones. Jim, hey, what's going on, Jim?
Well, you've got callers like me who are as pure as the driven flush.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
But you are, Blanche, you are. You are, Blanche, you are. You know it's true. Did somebody blow out your computer this afternoon with an email?
No, this was a blog posting over at headonradionetwork.com.
Oh, dear. Well, between that and that letter from the woman in Jet.
Yes, in Jet.
And
Bumbia.
Bumbia.
You're a well-traveled, educated man, Jim. Where is Bumbia?
That used to be one of the papal states.
Oh!
I meant I called you up to tell you. It used to be one of the papal states.
Just slightly to the east and north of Rome.
Yes.
Famous for their Bumbia cheese?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Near Tuscany.
Yeah, right.
That's where it'd be. Bumbia. And, you know, if you try to convince that woman any differently than what she said, she'd kill you.
Well, that's the problem.
I mean, she would whip your ass right there, not your ass. She would want to come out there and cut your ass right there on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the mentality of these people.
Bust a cap in you.
Or something else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, really, they are. And, you know, it's, I mean, I watched the interesting, you were talking about Hannity and Combs. I couldn't even bother to look at those two because I'm just not that much into necrophilia. But, you know, there was an interesting program last night about the tabloids on the Biography Channel, I think. And they had the people from the Inquirer and the National Enquirer and the Confidential, you know, back in the 50s that used to tell everybody dirt in Hollywood. And then, you know, the oldest paper in the United States, you know what it is?
No, I don't.
The New York Post.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. It used to be called the New York Evening Post. And, of course, they had Liz Smith, who does one of the columns there, and another guy who does the columns for Page Six, you know. I used to love Frank Sinatra. He used to call Liz Smith Liz Smith because there was always a constant battle between these two.
Right.
But, you know, what you were saying earlier is, you know, a headline is always good for a headline, you know.
Yeah.
And publicity is, you know, no matter what kind it is publicity, and if it's free, it's even better.
Yeah, because that's the best kind.
I mean, you know, it's kind of like Divine in Pink Flamingos always wanting to grab a headline. You know, that sort of thing. So, I mean, it's just amazing what these people will do to try to promote their agenda. I guess that's what y'all were saying, because I kind of zoned out when you were reading that letter from that crazy woman in Bridgette, and I thought to myself, well, who is this?
Well, we have to remind ourselves, Jim, from time to time, that the real nutcases are still out there, and they would, you know, given the opportunity, they would vote for Bush two or three times again.
Well, I wish some of your more widely distanced listeners could listen to the morning show here at Beckley.
Well, they could, but I don't want to give out the web address and help.
But I mean, if they could hear people like Dirty Bob give his view of the world and some of the stuff, well, his latest declamation was in praise of Adolf Hitler.
No, but see, that's where we're down to. I mean, that Dirty Bob freak and A couple of the others that used to call and, you know, well, they, talk about me.
Well, yeah, you were their breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, the fact that you've got off conventional radio has just gotten them so upset they don't know what to do. They don't have anybody to talk about.
I'm sure Dirty Bob is not sharp enough to figure out how to type in a web address.
Well, you can,
can't make computer work.
You can ask some of the local people who...
Yeah, he's like Mr. Scott in the Star Trek movie, talking into the mouse.
You know, you're talking about who listen to this show about Dirty Bob and some of the others who call in. And, you know, the way these people's minds work is just... It's just amazing to me. I mean, I just can't understand it. I don't know. It's just like... where are they from? And, you know, what color is the sky on their planet? I really don't understand where they're from. And at
this point, the only thing you can say is that they are cultists. They are members of a cult. They are members of the Bush cult. Their religion turns on him. Their religious interpretations turn on him. Their political understanding turns on him. I mean, on George Bush.
I really don't understand how anybody could be so stupidly wooden or woodenly stupid as to place themselves with that bad as the center of their world.
Well, it's there. I'm sure that the Register Herald did not add this to this woman's letter talking about the soldiers. Some have a score to settle with them. They have lost a buddy and or family members. They want sweet revenge.
So that's the reason they're going to commit these atrocities against the Arabs, right? Or the people over in Iraq?
Yeah, for revenge.
Now, what about the airplanes being buried in the sand? I don't understand that.
Neither do I, Jim. I mean, I don't have enough Stoli to make sense of this. The line is, I believe there is still a distinct possibility there are weapons buried in the grounds of Iraq. They had three airplanes buried in the sands there that were found by our boys. Do you know how large a hole would have to be to bury an airplane?
Airplanes buried in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Were they trying to mummify them or what?
Lord, I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, why would these people be burying an airplane? Isn't airplanes a function to get up in the air and not stay below?
Yeah, they don't do so good in sand. No, it makes no sense whatsoever. But, you know, when you go to that place where you're trying to make sense of these Goonies, you're gonna come out with your eyes crossed.
Well, you know, honestly and truly, what I heard tonight, and when I hear some of these people say some of the stuff they say on this show here at Beckley, it makes me believe in an alien abduction.
Yeah.
I think some of these people may have been abducted.
Well, it makes me believe that Invasion of the Body Snatchers was a documentary.
I don't know, but...
Because, you know, normal people went to sleep one night and they woke up neocons and all there was a corn husk under the bed. And what?
It could be. It could be a very alien plot to take over the world. They're substituting real people. Because, I mean, when you've got, well, who were you talking about earlier? Shirley Moore Capito?
Yeah, Shirley Moore.
I wonder whose toenails she's trimming now.
Oh, she's just nasty. Apparently she's going to work on Bush's Wednesday.
Her feet sticking out from under.
Pardon?
I wonder whose desk you can see her feet hanging out from under.
Well, we do have the claws out tonight, don't we, Jim?
Slightly. I mean, you know, it's kind of like that movie, what was it, The Firm?
Yeah.
Remember Nick Nolte and, what's her name, Holly Hunter?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's kind of like Shelley Moore, and that's what she operates for some of those big...
Well, you know, it's worth mentioning, Jim, that she was on one committee, a Natural Resources Committee or some such, where she had an opportunity to do real something, you know, at least try to do good for West Virginia. But she gladly gave that up for a spot on the Rules Committee so that she could do the bidding of her master, namely Tom DeLay.
Oh, yeah, of course. Naturally. I wonder now that he's gone. What I mean, is she just at a loss, and she's having Bush in for?
Oh no! She's not hurting for money. She's got a $3 or $4 million war chest. That's why it's so important to try to nationalize Mike's campaign.
Now, where are they going to have this big thing for Bush tomorrow? In Charleston?
It's in Charleston. It didn't, you know, it's a remote, secure, undisclosed location.
They're not telling anybody where it is.
No, you can only find out if you're a registered Republican and have the chip in their head so they can broadcast it directly to your brain.
And you have to pay $4,200
per couple.
Per couple.
Mm-hmm. For a rubber chicken dinner.
My God.
You know, I'm guessing. I mean, you know, what is there in Charleston? I'm guessing the Marriott.
I don't know. Maybe they're going to have it in that bunker over the Greenbrier.
No, it's in Charleston.
Charleston.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm being told by Nanette in the chat room that it's going to be in South Hills.
Where is that?
South Hills.
Now, where is that?
That's across the river from Charleston, right across the river from downtown and up back behind on the mountain. It's the Tony Knob Hill area of Charleston.
Really?
Yeah.
So those people who've arrived, that's where they live?
Yeah, when they arrive, that's where they get to.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I was just amazing about Bumbria. I just want to let you know where it was. It's one of the former papal states, but apparently she got a confused with something else.
Well, I'm thinking the dandelion wine must be coming in early this year because she had to be doing something.
Well, you can imagine what kind of medicine some of these people are taking.
Rheumatiz medicine.
No,
Granny?
It ain't that. I mean...
Yeah, 140-proof rheumatiz medicine.
Could be. It could be. You know, like I say, the art of distilling is very much alive and well in this part of the world.
Well, that's true, and there's some fine stuff comes out of it, but apparently Ms. Crawford doesn't need to be into it.
Maybe she's drinking methanol instead of ethanol. I don't know. But anyway, I thought that letter was... Airplanes in the sand. That really had me stumped there for a while. But anyway, you've got a show to run.
All right.
I'll leave you in peace. So.
Thank you, Jim. Have a wonderful evening.
Salam.
Salam. And let's keep rolling. Jeff in Pennsylvania. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello there, Bob.
How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad for an old tired fart. But it's really tough sort of following in behind Jim.
He is a tough act to follow. You know, Bumbia is a papal state.
Oh,
you know,
well.
I'd have gone days without coming up with that.
The reason I needed the call tonight
is
I found out today that as a result of Governor Dean's 50-state approach to running the Democratic Party, this Saturday is going to be the day that there are going to be get-togethers all around the country,
right?
To to get the the grassroots up and active and motivated. And I can't give you the web address directly, but if you search Democratic Reunion, it'll bring you right to the website where you can punch in your zip code, and it'll find the most local party to you.
Okay.
And, we're going to be lucky here in this end of Pennsylvania. From what I've heard, we're going to have Jack Murtha, Governor Rendell, and Howard Dean.
Hey, that will be exciting.
So
I admire Governor Dean for taking this 50-state strategy. I understand that Harry Reid's mad at him over it, and Nancy Pelosi almost broke a heel over it, and Rahm Emanuel's mad at him over it. As a Southerner, Jeff, I don't believe in writing off my brother and sister Southern liberals.
Absolutely not. And I take a word of advice from my old college roommate. I said, let them get mad. They'll get over it.
Yeah, they will.
What it really boils down to is if the people in the party aren't active and involved, they're not going to do anything.
No, they're not. And frankly... I was so dismayed during the Kerry campaign. I mean, you would have thought that they dug a big ditch around the former Confederacy and just floated it out to sea. Yeah, I can't get there from here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been proven. I mean, the time that Governor Dean has spent going down to Mississippi and Louisiana trying to get people organized. I mean, he's picked up active members in the party by 50% in Mississippi in 1 year. And if we can maintain that kind of stride, you know, there's no losing.
Right, and if you energize those people and you make those people, geez, I hate the way I talk, Jeff. If you energize progressives and liberals in the South and let them feel like that they are not just surrounded by barbarians and huddled in a corner, that they're empowered to go out and change things, because God knows Mississippi could stand a little change, or Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, any of these places, you empower people to change things, and you win two or three races.
To be honest with you, it's not just the South. You know, I'm you know, more than a couple of miles north of you, and I'd say roughly 50 to 60% of the people that I meet are either not politically involved or active or aware, and that's something that's really hurting this country.
Well, when you do the math, when you look at the number of people, you know, let's say it's a presidential election year and 60% of registered voters come out to vote. Well, you know, what percentage of the general voting age population do registered voters turn out to be? And in other words, it's this descending mathematical magnitude where if the pool of voting age people is 100%, you know, that, I mean, and then how many people out of that are registered? Maybe 50%?
Yep.
And then 60% of 50% show up for a presidential election, and 50% of that group is the one that turns out to choose our leader. I'm hard-pressed to call that democracy, Jeff.
Yeah, well, I feel the same way. And unfortunately, Pennsylvania, we're suffering with the problem of party, quote-unquote, leadership, you know, making a decision who our candidate is going to be before we even have a chance to say.
Well, yeah, and I saw I saw a press release from Governor Dean on the retooling of the primary process. And, you know, I think we're adding the Democrats are adding South Carolina and one other state, and I can't remember which it is, one caucus and one primary, but Iowa and New Hampshire get to be still, they're still first.
Yeah, I think it was Nevada also.
Was it Nevada? Frankly, I think we need more than four states early on.
Well, I personally would like to see every state have their primaries on the same date.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. And shorten the process. You know, I think either Sue or our friend Andy over in the UK have mentioned that the actual electioneering process there is something like 6 weeks.
Think how much that would cut down the cost.
Right. You know, Shelley Moore Capito, she's going to have a $4 million war chest or something for this campaign between now and November.
Well,
now tell me how West Virginia, and you're familiar with our little state, Jeff, tell me how West Virginia needs a $4 million political campaign.
Absolutely not.
It doesn't put anybody to work.
Put that $4 million into working on the roads as opposed to doing oil and chip, and that would make a big improvement.
I would say a considerable one. I drive on them. But it's, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and Shelley Moore is not going to be part of any of that.
Well, we can hope, we can pray, and we can get out there and bust our butts to make sure it doesn't happen.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm gonna go and look for Democratic Reunion. It's probably still in my box. I got an email about it. I'll check and see who's partying on Saturday.
Okay. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Take
good
care.
Weekend.
All right. Bye now. Our good friend Jeff in Western PA. Let's take a break. Among other things, it's time for our Workers Independent News update. I love those guys. When we come back, your phone calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, head on, 877. 443-2366. Email roars into bob@headonradio.com, unless you have to accuse me of being a Zionist stooge, and then you can go and do it on our website, apparently. God, I don't know. If you're not in the chat room, you should be. Headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room. You'll go right in. It's another free service. Enjoy our little community. That's what it's there for. We'll be right back. I'm Bob.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Despite some turbulence from the National Mediation Board, the union seeking to organize workers at JetBlue Airways has vowed to hold steady. The International Association of Machinists is seeking to organize the airline's 1,300 ground crew and crew members. The board ruled against the union, citing a lack of interest from employees. Under the ruling, the union must now wait 12 months before filing a new petition. In an email to employees, JetBlue CEO David Neeleman and President Dave Barger both expressed that the ruling was positive news for the airline. The union is also seeking to organize the company's flight attendants and customer service employees.
The United Steelworkers Union is hard at work at the bargaining table at Michelin BF Goodrich, working toward a master contract that can essentially also be applied to 20,000 workers at Goodyear and at Bridgestone. The union granted a 48-hour extension on the contract as negotiators work toward a Wednesday deadline to reach a new agreement. USW spokesperson Wayne Ranick says these are tough negotiations with cheap overseas labor markets threatening U.S. tire production. The USW's main issues are health care, pensions, and investments to keep U.S. plants operating.
What we're trying to do is get the investments necessary to enable the workers at our plant to produce the higher end, higher margin, higher quality tires that they can earn a North American wage that's in accordance to our standard of living, and yet the company can still be able to sell these tires in this marketplace and make a profit.
Ranick says after working with Goodyear to return the company to profitability, management is nevertheless again seeking concessions from the USW. Goodyear's pension system is underfunded by hundreds of millions of dollars. Ranick says the Goodyear talks will also be difficult.
Workers at La Trobe Brewing accepted a contract offer this weekend while hoping that their company's new owners will keep their jobs in the state. The Pennsylvania-based La Trobe has been purchased by Wisconsin-based City Brewing Company, and the workers, represented by the Industrial Division of the Communication Workers of America, are worried that the 170 jobs will be cut or moved. Reaching the two-year labor agreement was one of the final steps to completing the sale. Here is today's economic report. You worked hard for that bachelor's degree, so why has it been 4 years since you received a raise? Wage stagnation is on the rise in the United States, with earnings for employees with bachelor's degrees dropping by 5.2% between 2000 and 2004, when adjusted for inflation. Those are numbers released by economists for the White House, and could be one possible reason that the president has low approval rating when it comes to handling the economy.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Minutes and change before the hour, halfway done with this Tuesday night edition of Head On. I love you guys. There's no amount of information you can't find. What was I talking about? The Democratic reunion? I'm going to be at a Democratic reunion picnic. Yeah. The big three-county affair. Over in Raleigh County this Sunday. They're not all on Saturday. Yo, party at Wayne's.
Wayne's World.
Yeah. Wayne's World, party time, excellent. Yeah, I checked on the link that DJ gave me in the chat room, and it was, it's listed. It's one of the West Virginia reunion events. Hot diggity.
Yes.
It's an exciting time to be associated with a movement that wants to restore a lot of what the Democratic Party stands for. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people standing in the way. I'm sure you've seen the YouTube video by now of, oh my God, Barbara Boxer going to stump for Joe Lieberman? Ack! Oy! And getting conned, getting conned into this business, you know, Joe's comment about the Plan B contraception and the morning after pill, that kind of thing, and when he said that a woman, you know, if she was refused at a hospital, that a woman should just go to the hospital next door. And there's Senator Boxer taking it in big old spoonfuls. Senator Boxer, dear, you've done some mighty good things. You've done the right thing in many instances. But, honey, if you lay down with dogs, you're going to get up with fleas. And, I mean, you go hang out with Joe and you're going to be scratching because he has got the political plague. At you, we all fall down, you know. YouTube has, you know, Lieberman Boxer. You know how to search. It's quite interesting. But on the other hand, going back to our feature bit of wing nuttery for the evening, the letter to the editor, they had three airplanes buried in the sands there that were found by our boys. Do you know how large a hole would have to be to bury an airplane? You know, when Walt Kelly was drawing Pogo in the 50s, he was responding to the Red Scare. And I think he drew a jackass and a swine for Fidel and Khrushchev. And in order to get around the censorship, which in that time was quite thick, he made the members of the Jackacid Society, capital J-A-C-K, capital A-C-I-D, Society, the Jackacid Society. This lady is barely a member of the Jackacid Society. Do you know how large a hole would have to be to bury an airplane? No, Mrs. Gump, why don't you tell me? So our good friend Sue on Big Coal River writes in and says, you know, on the news a couple of months ago, they did say they found a couple of planes buried in the sand in Iraq, but they were very old, I think World War II type. No one ever figured out why they'd been buried. Oh my God! Is Hannity Job and Flush and O'Reilly and the Savage Wiener? Why aren't they standing on their heads about? Well, they probably did at one point or another. My friends, we have found the Brewster Buffaloes of mass destruction. Of course, you know it's Iraq. If you park something for 50 years, depending on where you are. You park it for 50 years, it's going to get buried in sand without you ever moving a spadeful. Sand is almost fluid. It buries it. It'll bury things. Babylon comes to mind. Babylon was buried. The ziggurat at Ur and Sumer. Eridu. Nineveh. Lots of stuff been buried in the sand in what is now Iraq. And I'm guessing it would not take more than a few years to get the sand over the canopies of a couple of old World War II fighter planes. I joke, they weren't Brewster Buffaloes, considering the mandate and who ruled where. Probably more likely British aircraft. De Havilland Mosquito, maybe. Hawker Hurricane. Spitfire. But you see, that doesn't work in the wingnut scheme of things. What it is they have to believe now, because they've gone into they've gone completely over the hill into the Tinkerbell zone. They're in pure belief mode. They can't deal with facts as they are. Prime Minister Maliki unloaded on Dear Leader today, and the best that Dear Leader could do. We had a frank discussion. It was frank. It was franks and beans is what we had. But they were beef franks. The Prime Minister of Iraq is telling off George Bush. That's more guts than most members of our Congress have. Or God knows our news media. No, you want to hear somebody tell off George Bush? You've got to tune in here. You've got to tune in the Head On Radio Network. You've got to tune in Malloy on Air America. Randy. You got to tune in Bruce. You got to tune in John. Guy James. Mark Levine. Because the well-heeled mainstream, if America was on fire from coast to coast, all you'd get, why do they still hate Bush? Yeah, I know why, Agnes. I'm looking at the same thing you're looking at. She just brought up, the 12th Harmonic blog. There's video there. Israel is using what was lovingly referred to, as Willy Pete. White phosphorus. The tears are streaming out of Agnes's eyes right now. They're not using them on soldiers. They're using white phosphorus on children. And if you believe in something like karma, you know this kind of thing is going to come around. If you've got the stomach for it, go and watch this little video clip. It's over at 12thharmonic.net. That's 12th harmonic. There's two H's there together. 12thharmonic.net. It's video. This is radio. I can't do video on radio. I'm not gonna go watch the video. You've got the stomach for it. Just looking at the picture's enough. Burned up children. We had the story last night of the entire family that was rocketed when they tried to take Israel's advice and leave their village. But that's okay, because I got some idiot posting stuff on the blog, inferring that I'm a Zionist stooge. But that's not going to change where I am or what I do or where I go with this issue. Because, you see, I followed a lot of debates and a lot of discussions, and I heard one reporter today who, in the space of 15 seconds, said, "Of course, Israel has the right to defend herself twice." But there was no further discussion, no definition, no attempt at discerning what that phrase means. Everybody talks about Israel has the right to defend herself, but I'm looking at a photograph of a little burned-up boy who's younger than my son is now. And I'm wondering how Israel is defending herself against that little boy and how that little boy posed a threat to Israel. And I think it's gotten to the point where it makes me physically ill every time I see some upper-level American or Israeli official on the television saying, It is regrettable that we have the civilian casualties. The problem is not the people. The problem is the leadership. The problem is not Lebanese peasants. The problem is the people who want to rocket the Israelis from where they live. The problem is not the Israelis on the street. The problem is the Israeli government that rockets little boys. I said a long time ago in regard to the Iraq War that it was evil. Do I think that I've got some sort of more highly developed sense of right and wrong than most people? No, I don't. I just cut through the BS a little bit quicker, I guess. I mean, I remember when the Iraq War started, you know, there were actually Democrats out there saying that, politics ends at the water's edge. Now it's my job to support the president. And I think that is the biggest load of steaming dung that I've ever heard. When evil is done, you call evil for what it is. Because right now, the Israelis and Hezbollah are involved in some sort of attempt to mathematically calculate who is the worse group. Well, you took our land in 1948. Well, you blew us up 2.5 weeks ago. Well, that's only because you fired a rocket into our house. But that's because you blew yourself up on a bus. Well, that was only because you brought in... This cannot be calculated. I've worked on it because I'm mathematically challenged, but I tried to come up with an equation for it, and the equation I came up with is, and you got to understand, in this equation, and I'll hear in the email from some of my more mathematically adept friends. The equation is as follows, and you got to understand it's in the equation where V equals victim, and the equation I came up with is. V plus V equals V plus V. And I tinkered with it, and I toyed with it, and I tried to take the square root of it, or work it with a sine or a cosine, or you know something like. But you know, I couldn't get any all those V's, all those victims. I couldn't get to yield something that equaled right and wrong. I kept running my little equation, and it just kept coming out with more victims. And we've sent the shoe lady to negotiate peace. And she's telling Lebanon that they have to disarm Hezbollah first, when the simple act of trying to disarm Hezbollah is going to split their entire government down the middle and throw them into another 15, 20, 25, 50, 7,500 years of civil war. Stop. When you realize evil is being done, stop doing evil. That is, assuming, of course, that you're a moral person. Condoleezza Rice is not a moral person. Condoleezza Rice is a beast. And I mean beast in like the Saint Revelation of Saint John kind of beast. She is self-absorbed, concerned with her own prestige, utterly useless in terms of her training, education, and expertise. Oh, why, we've sent Condoleezza to Beirut, and she can speak Russian to him and play the piano. Hot damn! Once again, we're being part of the problem and not part of the solution. Not... You know, work it out. I mean, see if you can come up with an equation where you can determine who is right and who is wrong. Because as you'll find, if you, the further back that you take this, it's, well, you know, you took our land. Well, you know, Babylon took our land. Well, yeah, but see, and pretty soon, by the time you're a couple of thousand years back, you've got an invisible dude giving somebody a bunch of acreage that may have been, we're not really sure. Somewhere between the Euphrates River and the Mediterranean Sea. And everybody is where everybody is. And the Arabs are not going to drive the Israelis into the sea, nor do the Israelis deserve to be driven into the sea. Most of the generation that, quote-unquote, stole the land is gone. These people have had no hand in it. They are there. And they have a right to exist. And the Lebanese are there, and they have a right to exist. Exist. You know, the United States, we have all those high-toned words. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but only for us, and only as long as you're not an Indian. Does a 6-year-old Lebanese boy, an 8-year-old Lebanese boy, have a right as a human being? Because, you see, when the Declaration of Independence was written, they weren't just writing for themselves as lily-white little English colonists. It says, I believe, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was a bold and brash little yawp. Thank you, Walt Whitman. To the world. All men. We've extended that to all women. All human beings. Not just those on the North American continent. All. But you see, we've forgotten so much of that. In the debate about the war and, well, you know, constitutional rights only apply to United States citizens. And if someone is in the United States and they are not a United States citizen, then they do not have any constitutional rights. That is the biggest load of... And, of course, the Declaration of Independence is by no means law. It is a declaration. Shot across the bow, if you will. But there needs to be a discussion in the United States about what that means, that all men are created equal. That certain unalienable rights include the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Funny, I noticed that the right to life crowd is stunningly silent. Well, no, they're not silent. Well, you know, Israel needs to blow up them Hezbollahers. And on our side, the left, the progressives, whatever, the liberals, the same crowd that was fit to be tied last week over stem cells, even they are surprisingly quiet in many instances. Well, of course, Israel has a right to defend herself. No one said they didn't. But the question is in the quality of the defense. And what are you defending yourself against? Israel's gotten played like a really, really old, mellow violin in all of this. Hezbollah planned this attack for a year and knew from the moment they started planning what Israel's response would be. And Hezbollah being driven by the Iranians, who, you know, frankly, their leadership, you know, the rank and file Iranians, they want blue jeans. They want Western music. They'd like to be able to express themselves. Their young people would like to be able to date. without being chased down by the Office of the Protection of Virtue and the Suppression of Vice, or what the hell ever. But the leaders are crazy. Ahmadinejad, crazy. Olmert, crazy. Nasrallah, crazy. Bush, crazy. Rice, crazy. Assad, probably crazy. Because in the name of principle, they will allow six-year-old boys to be rocketed with white phosphorus. For in the name of principle, they will use that white phosphorus. But the leaders don't bleed. The leaders only offer statements of profound regret. It makes me sick. It makes me sick. And today, brave UN soldiers slaughtered in an Israeli attack. I don't think it can be said that the UN soldiers were shooting at the Israelis. And you know what? The Israelis knew where all the UN posts were. Could it be possible that it would be to Israel's benefit to go ahead and get the UN to pull out? So that maybe there would be a few less witnesses to this atrocity? White phosphorus. Children. I said it before, I'll say it again. A pox upon all their houses. Mr. Nasrallah's, Mr. Assad's, Mr. Ahmadinejad's, Mr. Olmert's. Pilots who drop bombs on children from 40,000 feet. Oh, you're brave. We'll shift gears when we come back. That's enough of that. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. At the White House today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with President Bush. The president pledged to help bolster the security situation in Baghdad by sending in more U.S. troops. Tomorrow, al-Maliki will address Congress. Some lawmakers opposed to the Iraqi leader's condemnation of Israel's attacks in Lebanon have threatened to boycott his speech. In the West Bank, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice spoke with reporters after her meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Prior to that meeting, she was in Jerusalem for talks with the Israeli prime minister. Her peace plan would reportedly include an international force of up to 10,000 Turkish and Egyptian troops in southern Lebanon once a ceasefire is reached. There would also be an additional group of up to 30,000 forces to assist the Lebanese government. Israel has opened up a humanitarian corridor for the safe transport of food and supplies to Lebanon. In Riyadh, the Saudi king pledged $1.5 billion to help Lebanon. Lebanon. Along the Israeli-Lebanon border, the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas is in its 14th day. Four loud blasts were reported in Beirut as Israeli warplanes hit southern Lebanon, killing six people, while troops sealed off a Hezbollah stronghold. Hezbollah rockets struck northern Israel. One girl was killed. So far, more than 390 people have been killed in Lebanon. An estimated 600,000 have been forced to leave their homes. In Israel, 40 civilians and soldiers have died. In Malaysia, China and South Korea are still trying to convince North Korea to join Friday's meeting about its nuclear program. Talks that include South Korea, the U.S., China, Japan, and Russia are scheduled for Friday. In Washington, Senator Arlen Specter, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is preparing to sue President Bush in federal court on behalf of Congress. At issue, the constitutionality of so-called signing statements in which the president has attached conditions to legislation. Also on Capitol Hill, the House today passed a bill that would create a national database on the Internet of sex offenders. The legislation now goes to President Bush. In Washington, Democrats are criticizing a Senate bill that would punish anyone who helps underage girls cross state lines to get abortions. And in California, the heat wave continues with triple-digit temperatures expected to go on for the next few days. There have been 34 possible heat-related deaths. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business News is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A private research group reports that American consumer confidence showed a modest rise in July. This optimism comes despite higher gas prices. In June, sales of existing homes dropped 1.3%, according to the National Association of Realtors. It's the eighth time that sales have declined over the past 10 months. AT&T says its second quarter profits surged 81% thanks to the merger between the former AT&T and SBC Communications. McDonald's reports its second quarter profit grew nearly 60%, partly due to growth in the European market. Honda Motor Company plans to sell small jets, according to the Wall Street Journal. UPS reports that higher fuel costs will hurt its second quarter profit. The world's largest shipping carrier also says health care and pension costs are to blame. BP reports its second quarter profit was $7.27 billion. The New York Times calculates that equals more than $55,000 a minute. And the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission says he plans to push for more oversight of the largely unregulated hedge fund industry. This comes after an increase in fraud that is hurting ordinary investors. Light sweet crude settled at $73.70 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 53 points. The Nasdaq is up 12 points. The S&P 500 is up 8. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Some odds and ends now. Our good friend, the News Ninja, took care of my show post for me this evening, and yeah, because the News Ninja is ninja-like in his news abilities. The News Ninja mentioned that I was going to mention a couple of things. Some insane crap going on at NASA. And moreover, Kansas. And I don't mean as in Carry On Wayward Son, Kansas. The state of Wichita. A 6-year-old and a 7-year-old are under observation as of yesterday, presumably still today, in a hospital there. A 6-year-old and a 7-year-old. They were found Friday. And the officers who found them said that it was the worst case of neglect that they had ever seen. The mother is one Jennifer Wood. She had children of her own, and then she married again, and she had 2 stepchildren, 6 and 7 years old. You know all the horrible, horrible fairy tales with the evil stepmother? You know what I'm talking about. Apparently, the evil stepmother from the Brothers Grimm lives in Kansas, more particularly Wichita. She is accused of starving and strangling her stepchildren. Social worker went to the house to check on the girls. When she arrived, the children were locked in the basement of the home. They had not eaten for days. They had not drunk, had any water for 3. They were at the verge of death. Her biological children were found healthy and well-fed. The father is out of town a lot during the week, comes home on weekends. The father has now been arrested and charged with neglect. The little girls said they were just hoping their daddy would come home soon because maybe then they could eat. Kansas. Kansas. Or it could have been Alabama. Or it could have been Tennessee. Or it could have been Georgia. South Carolina. It could have been a blue state. But more and more and more we see this kind of hell on earth coming out of the so-called red states. Anybody want to bet? Let's do some rank speculation about now. Anybody want to bet, take a guess how these people vote? Anybody want to guess? Well, they got out on weekends. Thank God for Sunday, I guess. What a terrifying place. What a terrifying life. 6 years old, 7 years old. Of course, they could be in Lebanon getting bombed with white phosphorus. Or in a basement in Wichita, Kansas, starving to death. Remember the woman who traveled to, what, Illinois from Kansas and literally cut the baby out of a woman and stole it and took it home with her to Kansas? And when she was arrested, you know, of course, the news people go around, they interview all the neighbors, and they, well, she came to church every Sunday. I couldn't imagine it. This 28-year-old stepmother. One of the girls was found with ligature marks on her neck. Her mother had tried to strangle her. What is wrong with red state America? I mean, there's that very famous book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And Kansas was, it was specifically addressed to Kansas, but it was a metaphor for red state America. Is this an evil liberal media conspiracy to only report these stories when they come out of red state? Yes, of course. It can't be that there is something psychologically, sociologically, and pathologically wrong with the red states. Now, can it? Yes. Yes, it can. This is not creeping liberalism. These are George Bush's people. Just like the youth minister on the stage in Iowa who was hauled up there by George Bush to you know, shake his hand or kiss the ring or whatever you do with George these days during the campaign. A couple of weeks later, he's busted for diddling his flock. There is a sickness in America. Sure, God, there's a sickness in America. I mean, I mentioned this particular story on Friday evening. Not this story, but another story. And didn't give it the time it deserved. It is literally a crime in Las Vegas, Nevada, to give a sandwich to a starving person if you happen to be in a city park. Let that one sink in. It's kind of like Ben Gay, you know, it goes on, it feels okay. Oh, Jesus, it's hot, it's burning me up. Let it work into you for a little bit. It is a crime in Las Vegas, Nevada, to give a starving person a sandwich. Because the law is aimed at mobile soup kitchens. And the law is aimed at the fact that these mobile soup kitchens attract the homeless. Muffy, dear God. It's like roaches to a roach motel. I mean, there we were. On our way over to the casino. And we looked over at the park. We were driving by the park. And we looked over at the park, and there were all these disgusting, poorly dressed people huddled around a trailer. And I know you will scarcely believe me when I say this to you, but they were passing out food to these disgusting people. The city's new ordinance, which officials could begin enforcing... presumably already have, defines an indigent as a, quote, person whom a reasonable, ordinary person would believe to be entitled to apply for or receive assistance. And if you give food in a city park to an indigent person, you are guilty of a crime. I know there's got to be a Southern Baptist church somewhere in Las Vegas, Nevada. But I'm going through, I can't see anything in this story where the Southern Baptist church or any other church is out there saying that this is wrong. Of course, you can understand who's behind this to a certain extent. Why, it's the faith-based community. You can't just give these people food. You have to feed their spirits, too. They can't be eating in the park. We need to get them to our Salvation Army shelter. Because after all, how else are they going to justify the money they've taken out of the U.S. Treasury, you know, that you paid in your taxes to support faith-based initiatives? What did Joe Hill write? They'll promise you pie in the sky when you die. Day by day, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. Some city officials said they instituted the law in part because of recommendations from some who work with the homeless. See what I was saying? Who say offering food separately from other services, such as counseling and drug treatment, is counterproductive. It's counterproductive. I mean, if you give them a sandwich, they might not die. Or then some idiot will, well, you know, teach, give a man a fish and you've fed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you've taught him to sit by the river and drink beer for the rest of his life. I despise these people.
I think Bruce said it best the other day. If the body's weary, the spirit doesn't care.
Yeah.
He said it far more eloquently than I do, but how can you refuse to give food to someone who needs it?
Well, the mayor of Las Vegas is Oscar Goodman, and he says, this is not a punishment. This is to help people. The people who provide sandwiches have good intentions, but they're enabling people not to get the help that is needed. They don't need help. They need a freaking sandwich. Residents near Huntridge Circle Park on Maryland Parkway near Charleston Boulevard say people who bring food to the homeless draw them to the area. My.
Yeah, it's not like any of them could be there at that point, right?
If you did it unto me, if you did it unto the least of these, you did it also unto me, but, you know.
Well, you know, if Mama's paying big bucks for her shoes and Daddy's leasing out everything, gee, them and the kids could be right down underneath the bridge with the other guys.
It's just America. It's just America, dear. It's just America. You know, the Olympics came to Atlanta and they did everything in their power to purge the homeless because they didn't want them seen. Because in America, if you can just not see them... Oh, Muffy. Oh, look, it's another one of those homeless people. Dear God. Pass me another lark's vomit canapé, darling. I don't know why they can't go and get the services they need. You know, Mayor Goodman. Mayor Goodman said it's not about trying to starve them, it's about trying to get them the help that they need. Screw Mayor Goodman. Goodman. Screw him. Just screw him. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Well, let's take a break. Let's come back. I got the funniest little article by John Stossel. You're going to love this, right-wing freak. I'm Bob Kincaid. What you got here is the Head On Radio Network, which you can reach by dialing 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, Head On. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Jump right in.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
One and a half past the hour, and kudos to Dennis Kucinich. He is, in fact, the ranking Democrat on the House Government Reform Subcommittee on National Security, Emerging Threats, and International Relations. And this is what he said about what's going on in the Middle East. I mentioned this last night. This is what this is what leadership sounds like. At this historic moment in the United States, this is what not being able to read very well sounds like. At this historic moment, the United States is falling. Damn. Too much gin on the cornflakes, I guess. At this historic moment, the United States is failing in its moral obligation to bring a cessation of the violence in the Middle East. This policy of inaction will have great consequences for the region, the world, and safety of our nation and our allies. The United States stands alone in our ability to bring an end to the violence in the Middle East, relieve the humanitarian catastrophe that has enveloped the people of Lebanon, Palestine, and Israel. In the short term, we must call for an end to the violence. Then, without preconditions, we must bring all parties in the region to negotiate a long-term settlement that will be enforced by peacekeepers. This is the purpose of House Concurrent Resolution 450. As we demonstrate concern about the plight of the Israelis, so we must not be indifferent to the plight of the Arabs, Muslims, and Christians, and all others who are suffering the destruction of their homes, their families, their hopes, their dreams. As the violence continues with no end in sight and with civilian casualties on the rise, this is the moment to call for the end of fear and the beginning of hope. He introduced House Concurrent Resolution 450. and it, quote, it calls, quote, upon the president to appeal to all sides in the current crisis in the Middle East for an immediate cessation of violence and to commit the United States diplomats to multi-party negotiations with no preconditions. You see, why waste the daggum jet fuel to send kind of sleazy Rice over there? Aren't my pumps fabulous? They're Ferragamos. I bought them right after Katrina in New York. Why say, why waste the jet fuel? Because she went over there with a briefcase full of deal breakers. She went over there with preconditions. The only answer is cease fire. Everybody stop shooting. But you see, that won't work for Israel, and it won't work for Hezbollah. The only thing that an absolute ceasefire does is save little boys and little girls from being burned to death with white phosphorus or having Katusha rockets filled with ball bearings landing in Haifa. That's all it does is save children. And pregnant mothers, and working fathers, and grandmothers, and grandfathers. That's all that does. That's all a ceasefire does is save lives. That's leadership. Ceasefire, no preconditions. We have a lot of influence. But we have a dualist little imbecile in the White House who is scared to death of Israel and scared to death of the Middle East. And, God, what is he not scared of? Scared to death of pretzels, scared to death of Segways, scared to death of horses, scared to... He's just scared to death. That's all he is, just scared to death. And when you're scared to death, you darn well can't lead.
I have an idea.
Yes?
I know. Treat it kindly. It's in a strange place.
I said nothing of the sort.
No, I did. All these people that are for the war, take them...
Which one? Now you got to say which one.
Any of them. Take the ones that are for the war. Leave the children and everybody else out, but take the ones that are for the war that want to fight. Put them on...
An island somewhere.
No, a designated battlefield, and let them go at it. Let them go. But keep it contained. If they want to fight so badly, and they don't care about the loss of life, let them go and put their own up. Because, you know, I see a lot of armchair warriors wanting the war. Talking about...
Bring our boys home. Our boys don't want to come home yet. They went to Iraq to do a job. They are not quite finished. True, they captured Saddam, but there are still terrorists left to search out. Some have a score to settle with them. They have lost a buddy and or family members. They want sweet revenge.
Could she be talking about 9/11 again?
I have no idea. I mean, that's the crazy people that you want to put out in the field and let, you know, and the world would be better.
But it wasn't Iraqis who bombed the trade center.
Yes, I know.
You know, at least if you're going to...
We got the memo, dear.
If you're going to punish somebody, I don't think they get the memo. I really don't. But if the people...
Well, it's a liberal memo.
If they want to fight, put them out there. I don't see Jenna and Barbara going.
Or Chelsea. Or Al Franken's kids.
No. They're all privileged and they're pampered and they don't have to serve. But it's okay if you're looking at your child... And they want to go to college, or they want to go and build a career, so they go and become citizen servicemen. Has somebody been watching Starship Troopers just a little too much?
I know.
Why be an armchair warrior? If you're that brave and you're that vocal, go do it.
Well, it's a lovely sentiment, but it obviously doesn't work because they haven't, they're not, and yeah, they're cowards. Exactly.
They're cowards.
Yes, yes. But that's what, you know, what Dennis Kucinich said is what leadership sounds like. I'm sure he doesn't have anything approaching the money necessary to do it. But now that he's married, I'd like to see him run for president again, because maybe this time we could get you know, some media coverage, and they'd say, well, we've arranged for you to, like, have a blind date breakfast, Congressman Kucinich. Isn't that cool? Thank you, mainstream media. We ache for leadership. We ache for a leader. We ache for someone to go over, drive their fists through the table and say, it stops now. Of course, you know my passion for ancient history. This has happened before. This has happened before. It was going on, 80, 60 current era, and then in 70 of the current era, a Roman general named Titus got sick of it all. And what he did is no answer. This is a leadership problem. It's an Israeli leadership problem. It is an Arab leadership problem. And it is very much so an American leadership problem. And now the Israelis are bombing the United Nations troops who have not fired a shot on them. Whoopsie, it was an accident. Who could have known that those guys with the blue helmets and the big sign that said United Nations on top of the building wasn't a Hezbollah outpost? Who could have thought, huh? Break time. Then we come back and go downhill to the end of the program. Some would say we've been going downhill all along. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, what it, it's about the oil. And you actually, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Friend Georgia in California. Kind of a news update on Barbara Boxer's little trip to Connecticut. Georgia writes, I found out Boxer was going to Connecticut and nearly fainted with disgust. I shot a letter out to her immediately. Georgia has kindly provided the letter. Dear Senator Boxer, I can't tell you how shocked and disappointed I am at hearing of your active involvement in the Joe Lieberman re-election campaign. Am I correct in understanding that you will actually go to Connecticut to support a man that has clearly turned his back on the people of this country by supporting the war policies of George W. Bush? He is in support of an illegal war, as you pointed out yourself. I must respectfully inquire, what is motivating you to this action? I can understand that incumbency may enter into your decision somewhat, but let's be realistic. Is Joe Lieberman what the Democrats really need? How does he benefit the party in any way? He votes with the Republicans and against the people on many issues. With all due respect, Senator, I'm asking that you reconsider. Sincerely yours. And Georgia notes, today I got her response, and I'm pissed. I have this horrible sinking feeling that they're all corrupt and that collusion is a cancer in all politicians. I know they have to try to cross the aisle if they want to get things accomplished, but to kiss the ass of a man that will continue to push for the death of even more people has me sickened, to say the least. And this is the response from Barbara Boxer. Holy cow, why doesn't it say paid for by Lieberman for Senate at the bottom? This is huge. Dear Georgia, thank you for... It's an automated message, of course. Thank you for writing to me about the hotly contested Connecticut primary for Senate. I'm traveling to many states throughout the summer and fall to help Democrats take back the Senate and House. I started yesterday morning at a campaign stop for Senator Menendez and then made appearances for Joe Lieberman in Connecticut before he left for a Bill Clinton rally. Barbara, Barbara, Barbara. Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. It wasn't a Bill Clinton rally. It was a Joe Lieberman rally that was being run by Bill Clinton. I mean, let's at least be a little linguistically honest, okay, please? So why did I go to Connecticut? When Joe asked me to tell his constituents about our work together on the environment and choice, I told him I would. I realize this decision has deeply disappointed you. I completely understand your position and only hope that you will come to understand mine. That, well, it's not about understanding, is it? It's about not doing the wrong thing. For 14 years, Joe Lieberman and I have shared an alliance on a range of progressive issues, especially two that are central to my public service, the environment and choice. We have worked side by side on the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee. When Bill Clinton was president, the stakes weren't nearly as high, but within hours of President Bush taking office, the environment was under attack. Yeah. Believe me, it has not been easy to fight the Bush administration and the Republicans on this committee, who try to undermine the environment and its supporters at every turn. I know that's not news to you, but what you might not know about is the critical role that Joe has played in this battle. The fact is, on every single fight I have waged on that committee, from arsenic in the water to air pollution to pesticide testing on infants and children to global warming to Superfund and much, much more, Joe has been a stalwart partner and leader. Joe was the first author of legislation to permanently protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Permanently? He was one of the first senators to try to tackle the global warming challenge. The Republicans laughed at his efforts and refused to admit that we were right on this issue, but Joe was undeterred. It's that last syllable of that word, undeterred. That's Joe. Just take the undeterred, take the unde and out and you got Joe. And it's the same with women's rights, especially choice. Each and every time a woman's right to choose has come to the Senate floor, including late-term emergency abortions, I've had a reliable partner in Joe. He's one of a small handful of senators who's joined with me both times I've introduced the Freedom of Choice Act, the most strongly pro-choice piece of legislation in the U.S. Senate. Joe's had the endorsement of Planned Parenthood, NARAL, AFL-CIO, League of Conservation Voters, Human Rights Campaign. Of course, as you rightly point out, Joe and I don't agree on everything. Wait a minute. Okay. Yeah. And nothing has deeply disappointed me more than our complete disagreement on the Iraq War. The fact is, I disagree with many of my usual allies on the war, since my bill to redeploy troops out of Iraq by the end of this year is the toughest redeployment bill out there. As far as I'm concerned, I will stand alone to end this war. Jesus. Joe and I have virtually no common ground on Iraq except for one thing. We have teamed up to provide comprehensive mental health care for our I'm going to be sick. I understand that you disagree vehemently with my decision, as is your right, but on August 8th, the Democrats of Connecticut will make their voices heard on Joe's candidacy, and I will have deep respect for their decision. Oh, you mean you're not going to be out there stumping for him when he's running as an independent, Babs? Until then, I only hope that you will weigh our differences about this primary campaign against everything that ties us together. And please know that I will continue to work as hard as I can.
No more roses for Barbara.
Oh, that's just sick. That's just gross. Because I mentioned earlier the story, the video that's out there, and you can go and see it at YouTube, that shows her parroting the lie that Lieberman has told about what he actually said. Joe Lieberman made that comment about, well, you know, if they don't want to give you the morning after pill, then you can go next door to the other hospital. Remember that? Sure. Well, see, these things are actually happening in America. And Joe Lieberman thinks it's okay. Dateline, Lebanon, Pennsylvania. A Good Samaritan hospital emergency room doctor refused to give a rape victim a morning after pill because he said it was against his Mennonite religion. Whew. I'm going to kick something.
Now, wait a minute.
I know.
Okay, it's against his Mennonite religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, when you take that oath, it doesn't matter what religion you are.
Well, but wait, you haven't even heard the story, dear. Just wait, please. Rebuffed by the doctor, the woman called her gynecologist, who wrote the prescription. Her local pharmacy told her it was out of the drug and referred her to a sister store in Reading, PA. The former medical director of the hospital said he sees nothing strange about asking a woman from eastern Lebanon County to drive all the way to Reading for a drug. At $3 a gallon. She's been raped. Did we miss that part? Did I not emphasize that? Refused to give a rape victim a morning after pill because he said it was against his Mennonite religion. Mennonites? That's like Amish, right? I mean, this guy, there's buttons on that lab coat.
That's right, the bad doctor.
I mean, what? I mean, he's like, get up, old hoss, and with the buggy and the beard and the black suit.
No, he's already in trouble.
I mean, this is beginning to look like something out of I remember when the Harvard Lampoon did, you know, every year they did Lampoon a magazine or a book or whatever. They did, USA Today, 1 year. The Harvard Lampoon did, and you know how it says via satellite in the blue box. It said via big truck, and then the TV listings down in the corner tonight, 8 p.m. Amish and Impossible.
Bob.
Luke and Hezekiah refuse to answer the demon telephone and miss out on another adventure.
You realize you got to watch them English.
You be careful among those English. There's bears in them voots.
That's right. So she's been raped.
No, wait, we haven't done the story yet, dear.
Oh, I thought you were at the end. I'm sorry. God, it gets better.
The former medical director of the hospital said he sees nothing strange about asking a woman from eastern Lebanon County to drive to Redding for a drug. And I quote, people drive to Redding to buy jeans. Even if that were the case, that you had to drive to Redding to get this prescription, to me that does not rise to a compulsion that you have to pass laws that doctors have to do something. Oh, someday we got to get the webcam in here because Agnes is just beating herself in the head with the flat of her hand.
Oh.
Yeah, because, really when you get right down to it, driving from Lebanon to Redding for a pair of jeans is the same as driving from Lebanon to Redding while a rapist's sperm is fertilizing you in your innards because you've been raped. It's the same thing. Blue jeans, rape. So what? Same thing. Emergency contraception, often called the morning after pill, gives a high dosage of birth control medicine that can prevent pregnancy. It's a pill that Dr. Martin Gish, the physician who treated the rape victim, said he had prescribed. Quote, this is an issue I've struggled with for years. My current feeling is life begins at conception, and I feel that anything that interferes with that causes an abortion. The dilemma I have is the whole rape issue. Oh, well, I'm sure she had a dilemma with the whole rape issue, too. I'm sorry. I don't know. I shouldn't be laughing. Somebody should hit me. Get the skillet, Agnes.
No, you're not laughing because...
The dilemma, quote, the dilemma I have is the whole rape issue. Which side are you more concerned with? Are you more concerned about the mother or the life that was possibly created? That's my dilemma, he said. I personally don't have this thing worked out. I'm not sure how my faith can line up with my practice at times of what I'm asked to do. And the... Wait. The state backs up his refusal. Hospitals are not required to prescribe emergency contraception pills, and the state does not keep statistics on how many do, said Richard McGarvey, spokesman for the state health department. There is a law that says if a hospital chooses not to provide a treatment for religious reasons, they can do that. I'm so done. I'm just so damn done. No. I'm part of a I'm the director of the hospital, and I'm part of a religion that said, wait, no, because it's really out there. I mean, somebody mentioned the Jehovah's Witnesses the other day. They've got a rule that says you got, because they found a verse in the Bible that says you got to honor the blood. So the Jehovah's Witnesses own a hospital that doesn't give blood.
No. Here's what you do. American Red Cross, you're out of business. Mrs. Dole, we're sorry. You're fired.
No, she's done. She's busy being a senator now, dear.
Oh, my God. They made her a senator?
Didn't get the memo?
I got the memo. I just can't believe it. What is wrong with all of this? That's what I was saying. The oath.
No. We're not done. Stop!
There's still more.
There's more. It's just an ugly little Ginsu commercial. This. Kearns said a doctor has rights too. A doctor has rights too. And I quote. The question is, if you are a physician, do you have to provide services to patients that you think are heinous? And the answer in this country is, no, you don't. I'm kind of glad we're running out of time. You probably are, too. Because you want to go and do the same thing I want to do. You want to just go and pluck your eyeballs out, stick your head in a bucket of lye, and walk whistling off a cliff. Wait, the question is, if you are a physician, do you have to provide services to patients that you think are heinous? So, let me see, causing a woman to have a period out of order. I mean, this isn't even as complicated as baseball, where you got to walk out to the umpire with your little scheduling card and lineup card, and you know, we're gonna, and out of order. She's just gonna menstruate a couple of weeks early because she got a big old honking dose of hormones that made everything let loose inside of her the lining, the uterine wall. And the question is, if you're a physician, do you have to provide services to patients that you think are heinous? So let me make sure I've got this right. You know, this is one of the because I remember when we started talking about this story a couple of we started talking about this stuff a couple of years ago, and I remember being told by right wingers, "Well, see, you're just speculating. Nobody would ever actually like." Do that kind of thing. Well, now they're doing that kind of thing because the bit is in their teeth. Now that, Dr. Gish, and God forbid that I hope that man has no daughters. "Well, dear, you got yourself raped, dear, did you? Well, I can't be giving you any of the heinous, morning after pills. Because it's heinous. So you'll just have to have your rapist baby, because after all, you were wanting it, weren't you? You secretly asked for it, didn't you?" That's not really Amish. That's more Irish, isn't it? Sorry. "You were asking for it, weren't you?"
"What do you mean, Daddy? I'm only 12.
"You dirty little harlot. You came on to him, didn't you? You're not getting any of those heinous hormones from me." Jesus Christ. Why does this son of a sorry syphilitic seventh son of a sea cook, why does he have a medical license? Why is this man practicing on human beings? Why would you allow this man to practice on goats? And see, it does come full circle, because this is the kind of stuff that Holy Joe Lieberman believes in. And Barbara Boxer doesn't understand that. If you got Barbara aside and said, "Honey, this is the kind of stuff he's for," would she still have been sitting there grinning and glad-handing and lecturing at this woman that you'll see in the YouTube video? Would she? Oh, you know, and I'm not even done with page one. A spokeswoman for the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape said that if an attending physician is not comfortable dispensing the medication, he or she could call in someone else. "Obviously, in incidents like this, we want all victims to have access to comprehensive health care after an emergency." Because, you see, this dirty bastard, Dr. Gish, was he the only doctor in the hospital? No, but see, if he called another doctor to write her, to give her the morning after pill, then he would be complicit in a spontaneous abortion. You know, I mentioned a couple of nights ago when we started out talking about the snowflake babies again, because that weighed heavily upon my heart, that we were talking here about eugenics. That we were talking about the pre-selection of pretty little, of the babies that the snowflake parents wanted. And that they looked at the embryos and said, "Yes, this embryo, but not this embryo. Maybe this, no, I like, but wait, you know, this one's got brown hair. No, this one's got blue eyes." Now look at the other end of the right-to-life stick. She's 12. She's 14. She's 16. She's been raped. And the right-to-life doctor says, "You've got to have that thing grow inside you. You've got to have that rapist's baby. And, of course, you know, a full-grown woman. Well, you know, you drive from Lebanon to Reading for blue jeans. You can drive from Lebanon to... But, see, you can get along without the blue jeans for a couple of days, but you got to take the damn pill pretty quick.
Well, Bob, then they need to go to the produce counter there at the store. Get rid of horseradish, because, you know, it can cause spontaneous abortions. Get rid of celery.
Get rid of birth control pills.
No, hold on.
Wait. Get rid of condoms because they keep fertilization. Every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. And if a sperm gets wasted, God gets quite irate. Everybody sing.
But you're missing my point.
No, I'm not. There are a number of abortificants that have been used throughout history. For God's sakes, don't tell them about it, Agnes, or I'll never have another piece of celery with cream cheese on it. It'll be illegal, and I'll have to find a heathen doctor to prescribe me celery for my salad.
Well, now, I'm not telling anybody anything that you couldn't find in homeopathic books.
But... Shh, don't tell them about those either.
Oh, they'll go to the libraries next.
Well, no, that would involve...
Exactly. But he has breached his oath. He's breached his ethics. Are you telling me that the AMA is going to stand up for that?
Okay, so here's the word from the Good Samaritan Hospital.
Good Samaritan, my blood.
Some Samaritan. Kearns said, well, okay. We don't treat it any different than any other legal prescription medication, said Dr. John Repke, chairman of obstetrics and gynecology at the Penn State's Milton S. Hershey Medical Center. But Kearns said Good Samaritan will not formulate a policy for or against prescribing morning after pills for the same reason it won't perform abortions. Quote, I'll tell you why we don't do abortions. Because there'd be such a hullabaloo and disruption in this very Mennonite and very fundamentalist community that there would be so much downside to this in terms of people not wanting to come to this hospital, even though it's their local hospital. It's just not worth doing it. Dig it. Dig it. At the Good Samaritan Hospital in Lebanon, PA, it's not worth helping out a girl who's been raped. It's not worth it. Change the damn name of the hospital. You know, because they're fundamentalists in the community. Well, okay. Change the name of the hospital from Good Samaritan, okay? Good Fundamentalist Hospital. Okay, we got that done. Let's see. You can't see a microbe, so therefore microbes don't exist. Quit sterilizing the instruments for anything you're doing. Rubber gloves, gone. Masks, gone. Gowns, gone. Require Dr. Gish to come to work in a damn grass skirt with a coconut shell bra and a bone through his nose, all right? Because it's not a hospital. It's a haven for these sick little fundamentalists who would wreak their misery on... on all of us. Excuse me. You'll have that sometimes. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have let that happen. Makes me crazy. Why does that man have a license? Will someone in Pennsylvania please file a medical ethics complaint against Dr. Gish? Please. He doesn't need to be practicing medicine. He can go and roll on the floor and handle snakes and drink strychnine, anything he wants to do. I don't care. But he does not need to be practicing medicine because he deals with all kinds of heathen instrumentation. I mean, what? He's a Mennonite. Is he sewing people? I mean, he's not sewing people up. He's using pegs. I loathe this stuff. But fortunately for you and...